Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. I'm Ken Edwards. Sitting with me today, Ed Maher with the NCL. Good morning, Ed.
Pleasure to be sitting with you.
Phil Davidson, Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council.
Good morning.
How are you?
Very well. How are you doing?
Good, good. I know you got to get out of here early, so we're going to crank through some stuff with Phil.
Thanks, everybody.
You got a tea time or something?
I do. Winter tea time.
A winter tea time.
Doing some ice golfing.
Yeah.
What do they call that place, the other place? Top Golf?
Yes. Yeah.
Have you ever been there?
Yeah, I went there on Thursday.
Oh, you literally went. I heard it's a blast.
It's a good time. It's more of like a party atmosphere, I would say, right?
And an excuse to drink beer.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
But you can do that
pretty much.
You can do that on an outside golf course as well.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yep. That's a good point.
There's less walking at Top Golf, which I find quite appealing.
Yes.
So, big news.
Huge.
Got to start with the big news. And that is the Supreme Court, in a 6-3 decision, struck down Trump's ability to unilaterally issue tariffs. And it's got to be, first of all, I mean, we haven't heard the spin yet, whatever it's going to be. But the fact that it was 6-3 surprised me.
Well, the president already called it a disgrace.
It's a disgrace. But you know what? You appointed them.
Yes.
Well, when the tariffs, when he was getting ready to issue the tariffs, there were folks who said, this is not legal. You can't do what you're doing. And they went ahead and did it.
And 45 courts have said this is not legal. Right. And so the Supreme Court basically affirmed the fact that it was not legal. So here's a question.
And two of his own appointees voted it down.
Sure. Yeah. And it seemed blatantly not legal because he relied on national security. And the national security was fentanyl at first.
Right.
But then it just became, I don't like you, you know, I'm angry with you because you insulted me, you know, or something crazy like that. Whatever his crazy rationale was.
The tariffs were so arbitrary, the numbers, remember, it would be like 10%, no 40%, no 30%.
Yeah, right.
Well, so our tariffs are,
Our tariffs are gone.
Yeah, the retaliatory tariffs back.
Great point, Ed.
Are we going to have to beg them to take them off?
Well, like, if you're...
Well, they all love us right now, so yeah.
If you're a country, if you're a country like Canada, right, that has just been taking a pounding from us, what's your incentive to turn your tariffs around? To be the bigger country?
At the end of the day, if things don't go back, then we will have suffered a great diminishment in our role in global trade, and it will, in my opinion, be because They didn't have lawyers that really looked into whether this was legal to do it. They played a bad hand, too strong.
Or they had the sycophant lawyers that said, yeah, go ahead and do it.
Which is what he stacked his administration with.
Of course, that would not tell him no.
He got rid of all the adults in the room.
That's right.
Exactly.
The most important question, though, is like,
where's my money?
Yeah, the consumers covered 90% of these costs or 95%. So, like, when am I getting my tariff check?
I'll tell you, one of his acolytes came out and said that the people who published that decision or that information that we bore 90% of the tariff cost should all be punished and fired. Meanwhile, it's like, it's Yale, it's Harvard, it's this economic policy thing, it's blah, 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 blah. And I think it was his own government. So it's, you're right, Ed. Like, we've already paid.
Mm-hmm.
So what? Do we get it now? Remember, we're supposed to get a tariff check?
Yeah, and our...
Maybe we get a tariff refund.
We're not getting anything.
We're not, well, that's for sure.
And if you listen...
That money? Oh, that money? That money's gone.
Any of the manufacturers going to sue for...
Yes. Oh, yeah.
You know?
You would hope so.
All over the world. There was a think tank, I forget the name of it, in the wake of the decision that said that basically... it was going to be like $150 billion. If the government has to repay, they're going to have to repay $150 billion. And companies that have been paying these tariffs apparently have been organized since the start, keeping very detailed records of all this in the expectation that this would be struck down and they would get money back.
So we're going to go money backwards in this country, right?
Well,
it's cost us.
But also, think back to, you know, the last several quarterly meetings of the Federal Reserve Board, where you have Jerome Powell talking about the impacts on the economy, and largely this is due to tariffs. So you have all this pain, all this sort of stagnation that has happened and like effects on unemployment, et cetera, inflation because of tariffs, and now they're gone. So we went through a year of that for nothing.
What does he do? I mean, like, what's the next move? Do you then go back
to
Congress? Because the ruling, as my understanding, said basically, like, you didn't have authorization from Congress. You need to get it from Congress. So now that you just go back to Congress and try and strong-arm them to pass tariffs? Because I don't think he's going to get it.
Well, they've already been against him, at least in the House, on tariffs.
Yeah, so yeah. I don't think he gets it.
Yeah, he lost a vote on that recently. And I don't know, is he not... What would be really ironic is if all of a sudden Trump is a fan of packing the courts now and adding more justices and trying to get justices to swing in his favor on this. I wouldn't put it past him.
Court packing.
Yes.
So funny.
He hates a loss. We know that much.
That is for sure.
He might do whatever is possible.
But let me ask you both this and listeners out there as well. And you know, obviously, look, it's news. It's newsworthy. But how does it tie to the workers, Mike? And here's my, I guess, my thought. And that is, he used the same guys as national security to shut down collective bargaining agreements with TSA and all of the federal workforce, et cetera. Most of them have been overturned. I guess some agencies have been ordered to ignore the courts and rip up the contracts anyway, which is, you know, now we're in lawlessness land.
Yeah.
But does it go back to the Supreme Court at some point and say, okay, same rationale, like, how does the TSA's collective bargaining agreement stop the flow of fentanyl from coming into the country?
Yeah.
Does it have a fentanyl clause that says, when you see fentanyl, you ignore that?
Right.
I mean, it makes no sense.
Well, the national security rationale has been struck down time and time again from, to your point, that or, like, offshore wind farms.
Right, yeah.
It's like he's just been national security. We have to do this for national security, but
that's his default argument.
It's a very thin veil, and people have started to ask why. And I mean, like you said, Ken, he's getting his lunch handed to him every time in court over this.
Every time.
But he continues to make big moves in the name of national security, and it's like none of this stuff, we're treading water as a nation.
Yeah.
Like, all these big things are getting
not only treading water, but like we talked about last week, we're losing jobs. And look, we're going to talk about in the next segment something that that we talked about on Worker Wednesday, and that's the uptick in union labor.
Good news.
Yeah, good news, right? And then, by the way, for the listeners out here, we have a surprise that we're going international today.
Oh, dear.
International. The International Workers' Mic.
Love it.
How do you like that? So that's a little bit of a teaser.
I can finally use my Spanish skills, maybe?
Not that international.
If it's, okay. If it's the way the Carpenters Union uses international, I can guess what country it is.
It's the same as most of us.
Do they eat French fries and gravy?
Poutine, if you will. All right, listen, we'll take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. We'll talk about some big news in the labor world, some good news for a change, right here on the Workers' Mic, 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. So, we talked about good news, and we talked about this on Worker Wednesday, which is actually sponsored by United Healthcare, one of our sponsors. So, we had an uptick for the first time in a million years in labor density. And labor created, I've read varying numbers, but somewhere between 400,000 and 500,000 new union jobs. Mm-hmm. And that's a big deal. And it's the first time that's happened in, you know, I can't even say how long. The percentage of union membership ticked up by like 0.1%. And that's, you know, sort of neither here nor there, really, in my humble opinion. But you know where...
Is that including all the cuts from the federal government?
Well, great point.
Okay.
So, do you know where a lot of the uptick came from?
Where?
The federal government.
Getting reinstated?
No, the people that weren't paying dues all of a sudden said, oh, wait a second, we should probably start paying dues now, and we're going to join the union, even though we've taken advantage of the union and not paid dues for a long time. Wait a second, they're trying to get rid of us, now we're going to join the union.
It's so, like foxhole prayers.
Oh, my God, absolutely. So that was kind of annoying, to be blunt with you.
That's what it took.
That's part of it. And then, of course, you're going to see, Phil, like you said, you know, what happens if they get rid of all those union positions? Now, I don't think they're going to be able to, especially given the ruling for, you know, the tariffs in the Supreme Court. But that being said, It's just good to see that there's organizing going on. Unions are organizing. There was a lot of movement in healthcare, in education.
Yep.
Construction.
Construction, I saw that, yeah.
Right? You know where they went backwards? Manufacturing.
Yeah.
Mining. Two of Trump's top policy initiatives were bringing back manufacturing. Don't sell that house, Ohio.
Yeah.
You know, manufacturing's coming back. We're going to tariff the hell out of everybody, so we have to build everything here. And guess what? No. Manufacturing continues to move out of the country. Tariff or no tariff, it continues to be cheaper.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we continue to get undercut by other countries. I will say this. Part of that is our fault, meaning American consumers. We buy the garbage that they sell. And if we just simply stopped buying it and insisted that it be built here in the United States like we do, for example, Ed, with our hearing aid company, right? Yeah. Built right here in Minnesota. And that's who we're going to buy from. But anyway, I just thought it was interesting that, you know, two places where Trump has touted, like, we're bringing back mining.
Yes.
And manufacturing had actually suffered losses, not gains, losses. And so I think a couple of things. One is, you know, I've had the conversation with some folks, you know, in my sort of private life, and they're like, well, of course that makes sense because, you know, all the Starbucks workers and Amazon workers and Whole Foods and Trader Joe's, they all join unions. I'm like, no, actually, that doesn't
count.
They voted
to.
They voted to join a union,
right.
But they have not been made members of a union yet or been certified or whatever. That number does not count.
Yeah.
So you imagine a world in which, I don't know, more plants down south in the auto industry get organized, right? If there's a world in which maybe Starbucks Workers United can pull out a win, Amazon gets organized, right? If the Teamsters, you know, who I know are trying hard to step up their game and organize, you know, the warehouse workers, you know, that's millions of people.
Rideshare drivers.
Rideshare drivers right here in the state, great state of Illinois.
Yeah, there's a lot of potential in 2026, the year of the worker.
I think that's right. And so we have to, it's up to unions to, what do they say, by any means necessary?
Yeah.
Do whatever you got to do.
What you got to do.
Right?
Those federal employees must have heard you call them to the carpet on this show. Like, week after week, you were saying, like, guys, what was it, like 30% were union members of all the federal employees?
I mean, that's enough to drive you nuts.
Yeah,
still.
So yeah. They were listening, apparently.
You think so?
I think so.
I think if we want to bring back these industries, you know, manufacturing and things like that, we've got to make them good jobs as well. Like, part of it's not just tariffs on other countries. You've got to make these jobs that people want to work, because in a lot of states in the country, manufacturing jobs are paid at minimum wage, and the federal minimum wage is
$7.25.
$7.25, yeah. And there is not a metropolitan area in America, not one, where workers can afford housing based on working full-time at the federal minimum wage. I think the guideline is, like, affordable housing is you're not supposed to spend more than 30% of your income on housing.
Yeah.
So, right. Like, you can't have a job like that and be able to live wherever they are unless you're just out in, like, the most rural of rural areas. So
tent
they're not
cities.
Good jobs.
You can live in a tent. That, yeah.
In many cases, mm-hmm. because the federal minimum wage is terrible.
I know.
Well, it's been raised recently, right? Oh, no, it hasn't been.
No, not since, I think, the early 90s.
Okay, well, it's been like a quarter of a century.
Right.
Yeah, that's insane. And I'll tell you, so, you know, you make a good point, right? These manufacturing jobs should be, A, right here in the United States of America, B, you know, for every manufacturing job, especially when they build, you know, when they're building, right, building the things, you know, that's work for construction workers. Manufacturing jobs equal, you know, people going out spending money in the towns and local communities, paying taxes, all that kind of stuff. But when the companies are so bent on profit, you know, thin margins, right, and the thin margins come from, like you said, it comes from the workers, right? The fact that we don't pay a pension, we don't pay a 401k, we pay, you know, substandard wages.
Yep.
And then, oh, by the way, it's tariff or no tariff, it's still cheaper to move, you know, a job to Mexico or, you know, whatever, India or whatever.
Oh, of course.
And that's because of these horrible trade agreements that we've made. Like, we complain, we meaning, you know, we complain, but, but, you know, the country complains, like, where are all the jobs? Where, you know, well, mind you, both the Dems and the Republicans have entered into, you know, these, like, NAFTA on steroids, right?
Yep.
Like, hey, let's just trade with each other.
Yeah.
But the trade's not a fair trade.
No.
You know what I mean? So if there's a fair trade that we just set, here is the minimum standard for a worker be in India, Mexico, China, wherever the case may be. Or, and if you don't, then you can't import stuff into our country,
yeah.
right? And the Walmarts of the world that just, you know, rely on that model have to go away. But, you know, capitalism, and right? When it's convenient capitalism.
I think the president is talking about pulling out of his own agreement that he did down in the U.S., yeah. Canada, Mexico.
Well, he's going to cut Canada out of it.
Well, that was before the tariff ruling, so maybe, well, I don't know who has the upper hand.
Yeah, I wish we had a clip of that song by Nancy Sinatra, I think it is, I'm Sorry. I think that's going to be yeah. the Marco Rubio's job for the next few months.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry, did we say tariffs against yeah. you? My bad.
Papa, please take the tariffs away.
So, Phil, what else? There's other news in labor land right?
I guess if we want to get salacious once again.
Yeah,
let's please, yes.
Yeah, so, and we've discussed this previously with our labor secretary, Lori Chavez de Remer. And
she used to be pro-union, right?
She supported the PRO Act.
She's pro-PRO Act.
Okay.
You know, she changed her tune a little bit when she got into the administration, but hey, you got to keep a job, I guess. But she had a couple of ethical concerns about allegations of drinking on the job and
getting hammered in the office.
Extracurricular affairs. But now, in you know, more serious allegations have come to light with her husband being accused of assault.
Sexual assault.
Yes, and is now banned from the premises for the Department of Labor?
Seems, yeah, I mean, there have been multiple filings by multiple women for inappropriate conduct and sexual assault, and the punishment thus far is he's not allowed to go to that office anymore. It seems kind of light.
Yeah.
Just that one particular office. Go anywhere else.
Yeah.
Like, if you're...
Like, what is going on here? I mean, can she survive this? I was reading something where when the light was on her, there were some staffers there from the White House who said, like, look, like, Trump's will give people a long leash until it becomes a problem.
Right.
And once it becomes a problem, then right. he's going to, so I don't know if this has risen to that level yet for him. Who knows?
I mean,
I think the bar's pretty high, Phil.
They killed an unarmed man in, a man who was not a threat in Minneapolis and then got on TV and called him a domestic terrorist.
Yeah, this is true.
Trump's response was, they have my full support.
Yes, that's right. So I don't know. But who would ever thought the Department of Labor would have all these scandals involving
TV? But look, once again, if you're in any way, shape, or form involved with labor unions, you know, we talked about the NFL Players Association, you know, this is supposed to be a thing of the past right. where, you know, corrupt union bosses and, you know, using blah, blah, blah for personal use or just we got other things to worry about, right? Yes. So let's keep our eyes on the prize.
Yes.
Let's move the ball forward. Let's continue the upswing in organizing. There's still 70% plus approval rating in the country. And when Ed and I were down in Florida a few weeks ago for the Operators International, they did their own internal survey, Phil,
yeah.
which was shocking to me as to how the membership, the rank and file, viewed the union.
And this was across the entire country?
I think actually across the United States and Canada.
Okay, international.
Yep. And it was like something like close to 90% approval rating.
Yeah.
Which is just shocking to me because you always have 20% of people that hate you and hate what you do no matter what.
But they know that they're better off than they would be without you.
There's no question about it. So anyway, let's keep our eyes on
exactly.
that goal.
Yes.
Let's go that way. And
jobs.
Yeah, for sure. And good jobs, right?
Yep.
Not just jobs, good jobs. So we are going to come back with our surprise international segment, if you will. And we'll be right back with more of The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
Hey, thanks for listening to The Workers' Mic. More show to come. Sponsored by Hinge Health. Hinge Health specializes in personalized digital exercise therapy designed for hardworking people, just like you. It's pain relief without waiting rooms and costly medications. Visit hingehealth.com today. Now, back to the show.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. Today, it is the International Coalition of Labor, Ed.
That's correct.
You know why?
You tell me.
Because we have the operating engineers from Alberta, Canada.
Local 955.
Local 955. Welcome, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, we got Chris Flett, business manager. We have Anthony Noseworthy, assistant business manager and director of organizing. And, you know, so for those of you in our listener world, you know, you always hear the word international union of blank, mm-hmm. right? Nine times out of 10, probably 10 times out of 10, it means
Canada.
Canada, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the international. So it's fun to call ourselves international. So listen, let's talk. Chris, you're the business manager. How long have you been business manager for 955?
I've been business manager for just about 8.5 years. I was a business agent for 8 years previous.
And did you come from the field?
I did. I came from the mining sector up in Fort McMurray, or our northern district.
And that is, I mean, you guys go all the way up to the top, right? Like top of Canada?
That's correct. From our southern borders, our eastern, western flank, right to the sea in the north.
I mean, that's a massive jurisdiction, yeah?
Yes, it's quite large.
a lot of driving?
I do a lot of driving myself, yes.
Yeah.
I got a 4-hour commute Monday through Friday.
Whoa, wow. Holy moly.
Are you driving up from Edmonton or Calgary?
Yeah, I drive from Edmonton, which is our central district or our main office. I live, currently reside in Fort McMurray or northern district. So wow. I come to Edmonton Monday through Friday and then return home on the weekend.
Got it.
I spent a little bit of time in Fort McMurray with some of our crane operators that were the guests of Local 955. And I've got to say, I've never seen bigger jacked up pickup trucks anywhere in the world.
Everything about Fort McMurray is bigger than anywhere else in the world, including the mining and crane equipment that goes up there.
Well, this was during our downturn, or basically depression in 2008, where, you know, our members were suffering, mm-hmm. and you guys were kind enough to allow us to send some folks up there to help with it was tar sands.
Yeah, it was the oil, the heavy oil up there, yeah. and it kept a handful of our members in their homes.
Yeah, so we appreciated that greatly.
Still have a few members from that time that decided to stay in the Great White
North. Oh, no way. Oh, cool. That's pretty cool. I didn't know that. So anyway, all right, the reason that you guys, and so here, you're an operating engineer local, right? Just the same as we are down here. Heavy equipment, right? Are you guys hoisting and portable? Do you do stationary as well? Are you mixed? Like, yeah. what do you do everything?
We are a mixed local.
Got it. Yep.
Okay. Our bread and butter, the majority of our work, mm-hmm. Traditionally has been the construction side, but we've been expanding, and what we're talking about today is on the stationary side.
Yeah, good for you. So how many members are up there?
It fluctuates based on the work, mm-hmm. But roughly around 12,000.
Nice. So you had, and this is why you're on the air, right? And I've been following this. You had a victory, and it was a really unique organizing victory. And so why don't I just let you guys explain, you know, sort of the who, what, when, and where, and why, and explain, like, what happened and how you guys were successful against what I would consider a not great organization. And I'm putting that mildly.
I'll let my brother Anthony handle this one.
Yeah, so about a year ago, got a call from a guy working over at OEM, remanufacturing. They take CAT components, strip them down, make them brand new again. Mm-hmm. In a nutshell, it's kind of what they do over there.
Yep.
Typically, primarily for mining.
Uh-huh.
So this guy reached out. He's telling us, you know, Plaque's been with us 18 years.
All right, so let's stop you right there. What's Plaque?
Yeah, the Christian Labor Association of Canada.
Okay. And it's a union? Quote unquote.
We call them an employers association. I'll get into that a little more. I don't know if you call that a union.
Yeah. So for those of you listening, there's a lot of controversy about this organization, and they also live here in the United States, in Minnesota and Michigan. I believe that they're not big, they're very small, and a lot of people accuse them of basically being a employer dominated union, mm-hmm. right? To get a real union out. Their wages are lower than our wages. Their benefits are usually, you know, non-existent. The contracts are
garbage.
From what I've seen, absolute garbage.
Yeah. But they throw Christian on the front of their name so that if you oppose them, you seem like the bad guy. I mean, it's not unclever, but...
Well, Ed, is there a Muslim labor association or is there a Jewish labor association? It just doesn't make any sense. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So anyway, these guys reach out for you. And to what end? Like, explain why.
Yeah, so they've had issues over the years, you know, in any, you know, collective agreement, employer union relationship, you end up disagreeing on things every now and then, right?
Of course.
The big push for these guys, they felt like they had grievances that went unanswered. They missed timelines, to my understanding.
Right.
And what missing timelines ultimately does is, you know, the worker ends up suffering,
sure,
losing, right?
Sure.
Yeah. So they there was a lot of that going on, and I think primarily that's why they reached out. They you know, want it better. They want it better for their people. So this person kind of reached out to us initially. We went through the motions. We spent a good year planning before we got to where we got. And then when the time was right, we were ready. And we had meetings after meetings at our union hall to start. They started beefing up. We had, you know, started off with maybe five people. Before we got to the time when it was time to go, we ended up having, you know, over 100 people come through the door.
And how many people were in the bargaining unit or are in the bargaining unit?
815.
Woo! That's a massive, massive group. And it's got to be one of the largest defections from CLAC in history, correct?
Yeah, we absolutely, to our knowledge, is one of the biggest liberations of... CLAC members in Canadian history.
I love that, liberation.
Good choice of word there.
Really good choice of words. So now what happens, right? So you organize them. Do you guys have to go through an election? Like, did you go through an election for this?
Yeah, so what happens at our labor board in Alberta, we have all individual codes in each province unless you get into federal jurisdiction,
right?
Which is a little different from you guys.
Yep.
So yeah, we went to an election, won the vote by 82.5%.
Nice. Nice. How many people voted?
It was in the 80s as far as turnout.
Oh, 82% of the 800 people voted.
Yes, sir.
Oh, good for you. That's massive. And is it in person or mail, or how do you guys do it?
It's in person. We set up shop for 2 days at their place of employment.
Yep.
I got to sit there across from the plaque rep, who was looking a little shy when we showed up. And
did they fight you guys? Did CLAC like put up any kind of fight?
Not that I seen anything worth talking about.
Really interesting.
Yeah, they thought a bit of a back and forth. They did a couple of videos, tried to instill some doubt into the bargaining unit about who we were, and, you know, the traditional methods about sticking up for people. They didn't seem that's kind of not their thing.
That's not their thing.
Right.
And then, so correct me if I'm wrong, though. So, Chris, when I saw you a couple weeks ago at the winter meeting, you told me that you have to take over the administration of their contract for a bit.
Yeah, that's correct. Because of the way we rated this unit, we rated it in the final year. So we actually bear the contract until the bargaining cycle comes up early this year. So we won the election late October last year.
Right.
It was the final year of the collective agreement. So we administer their collective agreement for one more year.
Okay.
We will start our bargaining preparation in probably the next 4 or 5 months.
Good for you. When does the contract expire?
Late fall or end of the year 2026.
Got it. Okay.
So now that, I mean, when it'll create a really unique opportunity to show these workers and other workers the contrast between a CLAC agreement and your agreement, because when you're done administering this, you know, God willing, you get a much better contract. That's going to mean a lot to these OEM employees, but it's also going to send a really powerful signal to other people that are affiliated with CLAC all around the area. Am I right?
Yeah. So props where props are due. The employer isn't the big bad wolf that we're used to in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm.
The agreement financially isn't terrible.
Okay.
It's not not its full potential, but it's not terrible.
Okay.
And it wasn't actually finances that drove this. It was lack of representation.
Interesting.
Lack of a union that actually cared or was able and willing to administer the rules of the agreement. So we're showing them now better representation, which will build, you know, build that solidarity that they always were craving. This was an organized group that was craving union involvement, and it was just lacking because they were represented by an undemocratic representative. So we're showing them that representation matters and that a voice in their union has value. So I think I'm confident we'll achieve a better deal for sure, but we're going to show them that real unions actually represent their members, and that's kind of what's happening. And quite frankly, it did awaken others to the opportunity, and we have had other leads or other projects that have come off or spun off from this victory.
I'd love it. Good for you. How many CLAC members are there in Canada?
Coast to coast. Changes by day, but I'm going to say about 60,000, most of them in grocery or into to medical on the healthcare side or okay. The long term.
How many in our world?
In construction, we estimate around 20,000, but that's coast to coast.
Okay.
A lot of times we're sharing some of those members, so some of them may be an IUOE member or a CLAC member.
Hmm.
But the reality is I don't think they're as big and strong as they'd like us all to believe, and we prove to them that they are defeatable, even with the legislation or even with friendly governments and even with friendly employers. The shine is wearing off and people are waking up to good. The fact they're
good.
Not
good, good.
They're not a good group.
I love
blood
it.
In the water.
Yeah, good for you. And so let me ask you this question. Why do you think that the union or the CLAC organization, if you will, was not representing folks or would miss a deadline or, you know, just the members weren't happy with their representation, I guess I should say. Was it a matter of finances, staffing, apathy, all of the above?
Capabilities?
Like, explain.
I honestly just think it's who they are. We're a democratic institution. If you don't like the work of the leadership of your local, you can replace them at an election cycle.
Right.
They're not democratic. We hold, you know, a northern district, southern and central district meeting every month. 36 times a month, we're in front of the membership.
Yep.
Where the members get to scrutinize the decisions, the finances, and hold, you know, their leadership to feet to the fire.
Yeah.
Our business agents, as a requirement to work under my leadership, they must go out to the field and they must go see the members.
Of course.
And the reason they do that is preventative. You know, the members' big issues don't get a chance to become big issues because we're out there solving problems. And that's not what the other group does. They, you know, they take their dues and they move on with their life, but they don't actually provide the level of representation that is a requirement under IUOE.
So one more wrinkle, Canadian law different than United States law. What's left of our laws anyway. And that is it once a year that you guys have everything opens up and folks get to switch unions?
No. So that Quebec, see in Alberta, we have what we would say are some of the worst laws in the country when it comes to the labor code for organizing.
Okay.
But Quebec has interesting laws in that they get to, every year they get to reselect which union they want to do.
So that's just Quebec, that's not Alberta.
No, that's and I can't even follow how it all works.
Got it.
Sounds like
there.
The purge.
I mean, I got enough of my own problems here in my province. But
sounds like the purge.
Yeah. But there are some rules around raid windows.
Got it.
Around anniversary dates and things like that.
So, you know, look, it's you know, when I organized right for 150, it was usually money or management, or in your case, when you're going from one union to another, you're 100% right. It was representation. And a lot of times it was benefits and how come we're not getting paid what, you know, the operators get paid, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, just to show up every morning and, you know, what we would call our business agents would call it, you know, they're going to swipe in with the guys, right? So they're there in the morning when the guys are having coffee, get there early, you know, shoot the breeze, swipe in with the guys, let the guys go out to work. And then the business agent would go to another shop and he'd be there for lunch. right? Hang out with the guys for lunch or break, and then you go to another shop and swipe out with the guys, you know, when the guys are leaving work, you know, if the weather's good, hang out in the parking lot for a little bit, and just make sure that that they're feeling like they're getting taken care of because they're paying the salaries of the agents.
That's what dues is for,
right?
Yeah.
That's what dues are for. Am I getting that right?
That's exactly it, right? It's show up, you know, have a face and a name and yeah. You know, your representative.
And it's also
we show up to support our job stewards. Our job stewards need to feel supported by their union.
You're 100%
right. They're doing a tough job as well, right? They're on site, eyes and ears, and they are the front line of anything. And, you know, they walk a tightrope at all times. So
those are the stewards, right? So the stewards need the business agents and the union and the lawyers to stand, you know, I always said, we'll stand behind you, we'll stand next to you, and sometimes we'll stand in front of you.
That's right.
Right? So that's what it's like to have a real union like the operating engineers, like a real, exactly. You know, building trades union. And I give you guys all the credit in the world. You know, down here, you know, we had our run-ins with some of these organizations, and we have had other unions that try and step into construction, if you will, or, you know, public works and things like that. But they don't have the bandwidth or the muscle to take care of what needs to get taken care of. And they didn't come from the field. They never operated a piece of equipment in their life. So I think that that gives you, lends you immediate credibility. And I just can't, when I saw this, I actually just stumbled upon it. I don't even know where, like maybe like LinkedIn, Chris. I saw something that was, I was following it. And then I saw it when I saw you and I saw General President Downey. I'm like, hey, I'd love to meet this guy. And that's when he introduced us to you. So you guys are the first union folks from another country to ever be on our show.
That's amazing, and I'm proud to hear that. One of the reasons you found us on LinkedIn is as an organization, one of the things we discovered is, you know, unions, we do really, really, really good work. We do it day in, day out, and we're very humble about it. And I realized there was a gap that we weren't telling our story. So as a local, we invested into a director of comms and government relations.
Yeah.
And that's why you found us. So
that's
happy to hear that. He'll be happy to hear that.
Well, tell him it worked because he told a good story and it immediately got me fascinated, not just because it was operators, because of what you guys were doing. And you're 100% right. Like labor, sometimes we're our own best kept secret. And, you know, we want the members to know, but sometimes it's important to let the public know or the rest of the world, like, hey, we got this, we do this, we do this. So having a comms director, getting into the 21st century, being on LinkedIn, being on social media is massively important nowadays. So kudos to your guy. What's his name?
That's Tyler.
Tyler Bedford?
Yeah.
Shout out to Tyler.
He's happy to hear that, I promise.
Well, listen. We can't thank you guys enough for spending the time on a Sunday morning to jump on the air with us. Really proud of what you've done. And would like to hear back from you when the contract is finished and see if this has any, you know, kind of downstream effect if you guys get any more units from this other organization.
We would love to. We'd be honored. We'll come back and talk about the next victory that we achieved through this.
Awesome.
I also just, while I got the opportunity, I would be remiss if I didn't take it. We wouldn't have had this victory if we didn't have support of our international, our general president, our Canadian regional director, and, you know, one of our organizers that we borrowed from the international office that came in and planted his butt in Alberta for a couple months to make this happen. So I just want to say we are blessed that we are members of IUOE. They believe in organizing, and they were here to support us through the entirety of this.
It's a really good point. You know, I say this all the time, coming from the operators myself as well as Ed, you know, we are very lucky to have an organization that will put boots on the ground, put resources in the pockets of the locals, send in international reps, send in other business agents, do steward training, do business agent training, do organizing seminars. I mean, they do it all, right? And other unions, I think, go like, hey, we wish you luck, you know, see you later. Yeah. You know what I mean? And so, yeah. You know, your point is really well taken. That is, and to the most extent, that's the building trades, right? That's what we do. Like, we care for each other, and we take care of each other. The internationals, you know, where it makes sense, step in and help. And it really is a team effort. But you guys did the heavy lifting. We appreciate it. So, in that regard, I just got to read one quote, and this goes back to 1935 in the Wagner Act, right, which is the National Labor Relations Act. And this is Senator Robert Wagner of the great state of New York. And part of the reason for passing this was because there used to be company unions, right, which made the company controlled the union, quote unquote,
right,
to keep a real union out and make
no
sure
good
that
deals.
Yeah, exactly. So Wagner said, and this is in the I don't know, the legislative history, as they would say, there can be no freedom in an atmosphere of bondage. No organization can be free to represent the workers when it is the mere creature of the employer. And that makes perfect sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
So right on. Kudos to him. 100 years later, we're still talking about it. So listen, we're talking to IUOE Local 955 out of Alberta, Canada. Chris Flett, business manager. Anthony Nosworthy, the assistant business manager and director of organizing. Thank you guys so much. We really appreciate it. We hope to hear from you guys soon. And we'll be back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back to the Workers' Mic, everybody, right here on WGN Radio, powered by the National Coalition of Labor. Ed Maher here with Ken Edwards. And if you were just listening, that was an interesting take out of the operating engineers, Local 955 from Alberta, Canada. And we pretty much run out of time for this week's show, so we want to thank all the listeners for tuning in. Finally, we have our listener of the week, and that is Bill Byhun, who tunes in every week. He's a loyal listener.
Thank you, Bill.
And just a heck of a guy, so we love you, Bill. And with that, that's the show for all this week. Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in, and we will be back with you next week with more Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of the Workers' Mic was powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare. For additional information and podcasts of the Workers' Mic, visit WGNradio.com.